Well, first of all, somebody at Cranes decided that he wanted to write that the White that you're looking at the Bears at the White Sox lease, you know, has 6 or 7 years left to go, and the White Sox have some options, and they might move out of the city, they might move out of town, they might go to Nashville. That wasn't us. That was a guy at Cranes. Now, ever since the article came out, well, I've been reading about that. I've been threatening to move the team to Nashville. I mean, that article didn't come from me. But it's obvious if we have 6 years left, I think that's what it is, we got to decide. Are we, you know, what's the future going to be? And you know, we'll get to it. But I've never threatened to move out. We haven't even begun to have discussions with the Sports Authority, which we'll have to do soon.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. That's banjo music. Is that a banjo? That's from Nashville. Is that the inference, Brandon Fryer? Stirring things up. The Nashville White Sox. No, the Chicago White Sox in the news this week because we heard from Jerry Reinsdorf there. That's a dated interview with Jerry addressing, I think, as far back as a year ago, all of the speculation about the White Sox moving their leases up at Guaranteed Rate Field, I believe, 2029. And Ruthie, it is the biggest story in Chicago sports this week as it pertains to baseball because of how shocking it was to read the headline. The headline, the news broke on Wednesday afternoon, and it was The Athletic reporting that Jerry Reinsdorf was in discussions with a group led by Dave Stewart to buy the team. And if you're a Sox fan, 312-644-6767, part of you probably felt elated by the headline because that has been a familiar refrain. We've seen the signs. We've heard the chorus. We know the sentiment. Sell the team. On the other hand, comma, what that could mean in this context, if indeed there was any truth to that report, and Dave Stewart was the face of the group that Jerry Reinsdorf is talking to, that group has been instrumental in wanting to bring baseball to Nashville. So be careful what you wish for.
A lot of mixed bag of emotions. You just want to make sure that if he is open to selling the team, you're crossing your I's and dotting your T's the other way around. Crossing your T's and dotting your I's. And making sure that you're exploring all options, not just to one group that is trying to get baseball in Nashville.
Right. Well, that is the thing we need to get to, but I think I want to follow up on what we talked about first, let people know. The University of Illinois, according to Crane Chicago Business this morning, the University of Illinois is scrapping its plans to build a $285 million research and teaching facility called the Discovery Partners Institute in the South Loop on the proposed site of the 78. That's exactly where the Sox want to build a ballpark. Is it related? Do they know something? Is there any connection between this decision by essentially a research and teaching institute, which has very little to do with what you would do, the bustling atmosphere that you would envision a ballpark village to include? Is this related to something they may know that we're not privy to? Now, we have also some texters who have weighed in, somebody who claims that they are one of their clients is related Midwest, and 312 texter basically says it's because the city and Mayor Brandon Johnson have not followed through with the funding to the University of Illinois facility as promised by his predecessor, Lori Lightfoot. That could be possible too. All things could be possible. But in a week where we are discussing the future of the White Sox, the possibility of them building a ballpark on the 78, they are giving tours of that patch of land because of their ambition to build there. You're wondering how the dots connect.
The timing is suspicious, right? For this to break this week, for Cranes to have
curious,
this report today.
More than suspicious. I think implies
curious, sure.
Something is going on, maybe untoward. I don't know that we want to suggest that, but I do think it's very curious.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Connecting the dots is all we can do and play this, you know, hypothetical game right now just because of the timing of the two reports.
So let me talk about, before we get to the phone calls, 312-644-6767, the idea that if you're Jerry Reinsdorf, you are the chairman of the White Sox. You have investors that you also have to consider when you are deciding what to do about the future of your team, if you're selling the team. Spoke to somebody in the industry yesterday who would be in a position to know this, and it was a very good conversation, somebody with experience in this type of work and this type of wealth. And the question was asked to me from him about, think about it this way. And this is a rhetorical question. I'm not implying anything, but think about it this way. If you wanted to maximize your return on the investment, which Jerry Reinsdorf has done very well in this investment from 1981 when it was a $20 million investment, you look at the White Sox being worth $2.05 billion now. But it was just asked to me, if you were trying to get the most out of selling the White Sox, would you limit it to one group that you're trying to deal with, because the White Sox have not been openly for sale? And so wouldn't you open it to the highest bidder? And wouldn't that highest bidder be somebody who wouldn't necessarily be somebody connected as tightly to Tony La Russa, who wants to move a team to Nashville? It was suggested to me that to look deeper into this to make sure that it wasn't a leverage ploy. Something to, out of the pro sports owner handbook, that would say this is how you get a stadium built, or this is how you apply pressure with the implied threat of leaving the city where you live or where you work or where you exist. So something to keep in mind as well.
Going back to timing too, what I found so curious about the report that perhaps he is open to selling the team is, why now? After you just had the worst season in the history of the sport. The franchise, the obviously $2.05 billion is a very huge increase from where you purchased the team, and sure, you're going to profit off that. But I think, why would you do it now? Are you really that sick of it? Do you not want to deal with it? Like, what is the why now? That was really why I was
in
most
his statement.
Perplexed.
Jerry Reinsdorf did seem as fed up as ever, and he said that this was as difficult of a year as he's ever endured. And I don't think anybody finds that hard to believe.
Yeah.
So perhaps that could be as simple as that. It's just like, enough's enough.
I'm done. Right.
I'm done.
But to me, it's just the value of the franchise can't. It said potentially the lowest it could be at this time in history. So I just was curious to see that you want to sell it when it's really at rock bottom.
708 texts in, never been part of the sell the team crowd. If selling means the team leaving, I'd rather Jerry stay the owner. That's what I'm getting at.
Mm.
I think that's an interesting text, and I think that is a understandable point of view. Would you really prefer selling the team if it means potentially the team leaving town? I don't think so.
Right.
The White Sox belong on the South Side. And the other thing to factor in, and this is one thing that's hard for me to reconcile. We all know how Jerry Reinsdorf clings to the idea and the notion, and was affected by the Brooklyn Dodgers leaving for Los Angeles for greener pastures and prosperity in California, in Los Angeles. And they became the LA Dodgers. And that affected Jerry Reinsdorf in a profound way. It just makes me wonder if somebody who was affected that profoundly by that moment in history, baseball history, would leave a legacy that includes selling a team to a group that would take the White Sox out of that city, out of Chicago. I don't think he would want to be part of that. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would want that to be part of his legacy. And maybe that's naive, and maybe that's not seeing things and being cynical enough, but I just would wonder if that would be enough for him to avoid that path. So that makes me a little bit, I don't want to say skeptical, but I factor that into every news story and headline that we see as this story continues to evolve and develop, and it will continue to evolve and develop. Let's go to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Let's continue the conversation with Chris. Chris, thanks for calling the Mullin Haw Show.
Good morning, guys. Longtime listener. And cut me a little slack. I'm a longtime fan of Dustin, longtime friends. So maybe I'm a little bit off on my point, but hear me out on this. From what I've read, Major League Baseball is going to expand. And obviously, Nashville is one of the places that they've talked about. And they said that they might expand up to two teams. Now, from what I've read, teams, owners, if there's expansion, it's like a $3 billion buy-in for a new team to come into the league. I don't see the White Sox being able to move to Nashville and the owners ignoring the fact that if they expand and put a new franchise there, they're splitting $3 billion. And if they put two teams in, because, you know, the Twins are for sale and people talk about them relocating. You have two established markets in Minnesota and Chicago. Why would it benefit the owners to vote and approve the transfer of the White Sox to move to Nashville when the league is already considered expanding? You're talking about $200-300 million. These owners are shrewd businessmen, and I don't think they make a lot of decisions where they ignore a $300 million payday. I'm going to hang up and let you guys share your thoughts.
I think it's a very good question. I think it's a very fair question. If you're going to expand to 32 teams, Nashville would be at the top of the list along with Portland. And the idea of an expansion team in a city might be more appealing than one that already exists somewhere else. And you'd always be dealing with that sort of mixed identity, confused identity. Look at it didn't hurt the Ravens necessarily when the Browns moved there. But I do feel like there's some residue that you could avoid by just becoming an expansion team in a city rather than having a previous team move there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If baseball in Nashville is inevitable, then preserve the Sox fans and the franchise. To me, that's kind of where it feels like if there's going to be an expansion and a team in Nashville, then keep the Sox in Chicago.
Well, Nashville, from their perspective, probably just wants a team, any team. They
Correct.
Might take the Sox, they might take the first team available. I think what the suggestion is that the owners could stop the White Sox from moving to Nashville in favor of an expansion team. That's an interesting dynamic and not quite sure how other owners would feel about it. But Jerry Reinsdorf's a powerful man, and I do wonder what kind of sway that would hold over some owners who would be involved in those decisions. So 773, I'm a tax CPA. Jerry's value in the Sox is $380 million. He'll pay estate tax of $133 million upon his death, which he probably has financed through life insurance at a fraction of that. He's not selling. Interesting. So these are perspectives that we don't always consider.
Mm-hmm.
630, Jerry has proven time and again that he doesn't care what fans think or feel. Stay or go does not matter to him. He does what he wants when he wants. 847, why now? Jerry sees the writing on the wall. He can't increase the value in the next 5 years, and he doesn't want to hold on that long. Getting the team sold under advantageous tax rules, see the Orioles, is at the front of his mind. Good comments, good perspectives from the text line. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jake is on the road. Good morning, Jake. Welcome to Mullin Haw.
Hi. The first caller, he made some good points. I did not know that there was a $3 billion, which, again, if you're going to sell it for $2 billion, you would think that the value would be at least the minimum, especially in the city of Chicago. But I find it hard to believe that there's not billionaires lining up in Chicago that would want to get in on this. You've seen how poorly he's run the team. The Cubs are a freaking money-making machine. You could probably do the same thing with this new development. I don't know. I'll hang up and see what you guys think.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the phone call, Jake. I know that I don't think it's comparable to the Cubs situation. I don't know that that's an apt comparison in town. I don't see that what the Cubs are doing affecting what the White Sox are doing.
And if this potential sale to this group that's trying to get a team in Nashville is real, correct me if I'm wrong, David, but there's a relationship, right, between the seller and the buyer potentially here, like that's kind of driving this. And, you know, if Jerry wants to help out a friend, you know, it's sometimes that's And I don't know, we're talking about billions of dollars here. Like, it's hard for me to wrap my head around kind of the reality of this situation.
Right. And I think the Dave Stewart-led group has been involved with other projects and other potential, in going to Nashville because of the quest to bring baseball there, the Music City group. Some people said yesterday, another person I spoke to said, be careful how much credit you give that group or how much you believe in the viability of their ability of being able to have the financial resources. Mm. And I don't know enough about that group, and maybe we'll find out more if this continues, but it's something to keep in the back of your mind. It's something that is going to be there until there's some resolution about what's going to happen with the the South Loop. And I don't know if we're going to get any resolution this offseason, but certainly we can hope for some. The White Sox want to build a ballpark there. It's part of Related Midwest $9 billion development in that neighborhood, and we'll continue to talk about it because Bruce Levine might have some thoughts, maybe even some answers, and we'll talk to him next. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully today. Now joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline is our baseball insider, Bruce Levine. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Well, I'm just sitting here dreaming about a new ballpark for the White Sox in my old neighborhood in the southeast side of Chicago at somewhere around 95th Street. So,
is that how you interpret this week's news or report from The Athletic, Bruce, that Jerry Reinsdorf is in active discussions with a group led by Dave Stewart? Does that make you feel like they are going to be closer to selling the team and maybe potentially having the White Sox leave the city? Or do you think this is something related to their quest to build the ballpark at the 78?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, David. Honestly, is it a ploy? I don't think it's a ploy. I think it's just, it's good business to try to go out there and get the best deal you can in a new ballpark. I don't think there's anybody... Well, I won't say that, but I will say there's the majority of people believe that the White Sox Park, which is the fifth oldest in baseball, is antiquated and that the area that it's in should be changed. And the White Sox should have the very best ballpark in the very best area with the best entertainment venue around it. I think that is what 2025 and beyond is all about. And because the White Sox stink and because Jerry Reinsdorf is being looked at as a guy that's trying to do something bad with the White Sox, I think it's hurting the idea that White Sox fans deserve to have the best ballpark, the best venue, and the best place.
Bruce, I feel like there's kind of this conversation right now that's very linear, right? It's either Jerry sells the team and they leave Chicago or they stay here and Jerry's the owner and they build the new stadium. Do you see a scenario where Jerry maybe is open to selling the team, but they still stay in Chicago and build a new stadium?
Yeah, Ruthie, I mean, that's the idea, but, it's kind of contrary, isn't it? I mean, okay, if you take Jerry out of the picture, are people in Chicago, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, the fans, are they okay with a new owner getting a new stadium? I think that's what you're hitting on, and I think that's a real fair question. In other words, is this just pushback against Jerry Reinsdorf at this point? Will a new owner be looked at differently in Chicago? But I can tell you this for almost 100%, and that is anybody that would buy the White Sox, the first thing you would hear out of that owner would be, we need a new ballpark. Mm. We can't stay where we're at. Attainable. It's not where you need to have a ballpark now, where you want entertainment value around the ballpark. You want accessibility at night, and you want, you know, trains and all kinds of access coming into your ballpark, making it easier for the fan and more fun. And White Sox fans deserve that.
Do you think the White Sox are for sale, Bruce? Did we lose Bruce? We lost Bruce.
The suspense.
Oh, he just hung up on us. That's very possible. Maybe he didn't like the tone of the question.
The suspense.
I do wonder if the White Sox are indeed for sale. If you were going to sell the team, you would typically go about it in a way that would be open to other bidders. And I just don't know if that is the case with what we hear now or what we have learned this week. So I wonder, as we reconnect with Bruce, if he believes that the White Sox are for sale. Bruce?
Yeah.
Are the White Sox indeed for sale in your mind?
Are they for sale? I can't tell you that for sure. I can tell you that the White Sox are listening to proposals. I think that's the news, right? The news is that the White Sox for the first time are talking to prospective buyers about being able to sell the White Sox. Do you think it? Otherwise, you would just say, well, it's a ploy. Stewart and La Russa are friends of Reinsdorf. They're just using this for leverage to try to get the ballpark here. So if you believe that part of it, okay. I think that Reinsdorf is listening to the Stewart group. I think he has to, just like he had to think about moving the White Sox in 1987 and 1988 before they got the deal for the new ballpark where it's at right now. It's business. Because the way the franchise is right now and because the White Sox are – let's just give you a different scenario. Would the state of Illinois, the governor, the city of Chicago have a different take on Jerry Reinsdorf and his group asking for help for a new stadium – if they were a better ball club?
Do you think the quality of the team has anything to do with the quest for a new the willingness for government's subsidies to be created and provided for the White Sox?
I think more importantly, the perception of the taxpayer and what they have right there is a concern. Okay, it's always a concern to the politicians, of the perception of how they spend their money, the taxpayers' money. And right now, you know, the White Sox product is just not acceptable to the fans or to Jerry Reinsdorf and the people that he owns the team with. It's just not. It's a bad look right now because of the fact that they're not a very good baseball team. I think that has to go into the equation.
Is there a correlation in your mind, Bruce, between the quality of the club and a new stadium in terms of, you know, attracting free agents and making this a more desirable place to play? Or is this still Chicago?
Well, you know, again, it's a really good question, Ruthie. I think it's still Chicago. I don't think you're going to get the upper tier, but, you know, right now they're not going to be spending money on upper tier free agents. Okay. They're in survival mode right now. Their TV deal, just like all the RSNs in baseball right now, have fallen apart completely. They don't know, even though they started a new TV network with the Bulls and the Blackhawks, they still don't know what the revenues are going to be and how all the revenues are going to be taken in, how much money that'll be. Every RSN out there right now in baseball is concerned about losing anywhere from 40 to $70 million a year because of their RSNs being unstable. And that's the name of the game in baseball. You saw the Minnesota Twins go up for sale earlier in the week. This isn't going to be unique. You're going to see more baseball teams going up for sale because of the fact that the revenues from RSNs are so significant and so unpredictable right now.
Along those lines, Bruce, because of what you just said, is there a feeling around baseball and as it pertains to the Sox, maybe to a lesser degree, but more so to the Cubs, that this offseason free agency
will be very quiet and dormant because the prices that and the salaries that players will be seeking are not salaries that these teams losing money will be willing to pay.
Not for the big free agents, okay? And we saw that last year, didn't we, David? It's, you know, Corbin Burns is going to get 30 million times six or seven, right? He's the best pitcher out there. He's, a difference maker. He could be for the Chicago Cubs, the John Lester of 2025, right? So if the difference makers that are out there free agent-wise are not going to have a problem. How many of those are out there? Maybe two or three tops. The rest of them might have trouble. So that's why the Cody Bellinger situation of him letting the Cubs know if he's going to be a free agent or not right after the World Series ends, he has to let them know if he's picking up the $30 million option. That's why I think it's so significant that, from what I hear, that he's going to definitely go to free agency and try the market, because the marketplace is really soft for offensive players and players who are versatile like Bellinger. Not that he had a great year last year, but the potential for him to be a difference maker is certainly still out there.
Bruce, if I can just change direction here for a minute, I really want to get your thoughts on the games last night and just the envy maybe we're feeling here in Chicago watching playoff baseball in other cities.
Well, what you're seeing is, even though the Guardians had huge home runs from guys that aren't household names, the household names and the stars are impacting all of these series dramatically. You know, you see the Dodgers stars, how they're impacting. You're seeing the Yankee stars that are starting to impact it again. You're seeing closing and great big arms, being a factor in games being won and lost right now. So, you know, what are the White Sox and Cubs missing right now? They're missing stars. Okay. For the first time in a long time over the last year or two, maybe Bellinger had a star year in 2023. We're not seeing stars in either one of the ball clubs. And that is even in their down days, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s, you always had a star or two on each team. I think that factor is there in the playoffs. I think it's missing for the Cubs, and eventually the White Sox are going to have to get to that as well.
Bruce, I look forward to Inside the Clubhouse 9 to 11 every Saturday morning. You and Ryan McGuffey back talking tomorrow, and there's plenty to discuss.
Lady and gentlemen, thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
Thank you, Bruce.
Bruce Levine, our Score Baseball insider. And tomorrow morning, he will join Guff on Inside the Clubhouse. And they'll talk about the White Sox potentially selling the team. They'll talk about the Cubs in free agency. And they'll talk about a great postseason in baseball, which will continue today with both games in
You know
action.
Guff has a lot to say about it.
Yeah, he does. He's not shy. And it's great to have him on board as well. When we come back, you know what time it is, 7:40 on a Friday morning. That means Joe Fortenbaugh, Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully this morning. You know what that music means. That means it's time for Joe Fortenbaugh, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Joe. How are we this morning?
We're 4-2 going to the bye week here, gentlemen and ladies. It's nice to see everyone this morning, and I do mean that. See, this is the first year I've ever used Zoom. In the 2,000 years I've been coming on this fine program, we've really ramped up the tech.
You should see our numbers, Joe. Our Twitch numbers are off the charts because you are making an appearance.
Well, I'm wearing the Jackson Pollock shirt this morning. I put on my Korean sunscreen. I got the whole facial healthcare thing going on these days, courtesy of my wife. So, yeah, and that's a big thing I've learned, David. The Korean skincare game is the best skincare game in the business. So that's where you've got to get right. Like, please.
It's a thing. Very trendy right now.
Is it really?
Look at me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Snail mucin. Snail mucin is a thing.
Yep. Like, look at us. Look at us talking Korean skincare. That's what the score is about. Very, it's what the score has always been about.
Very TikTok, very Gen Z of you, Joe.
I actually have no idea how any of this works. Basically, I married someone who looks at me and is like, look, you are aging rapidly. We need to do something about it. Here is a skincare routine for you. So it's all lined up for me every morning. The lotions, the serums. Wow. All the different fun things. So yeah, that's what your boy's life has been about. Bears in the backyard and Korean skincare.
Whatever helps you handle all of the stress that you have to deal with, Joe, because you are an important guy. They use you all of the time. You are on 24/7, it seems, and we're just glad you're able to join us on a regular basis. Let's look at this weekend in the NFL. The Bears are off, but obviously there are other games of interest.
A lot of games of interest, and a lot of big ones. I'm going to start with one of my favorites right out of the gate. I think there's a great angle to play in this Niners-Chiefs game. Niners in the first half, all right? The money line's right around minus 115, so you don't even have to worry about a spread here. As good as Kansas City has been, they are slow starters. 2-9 against the spread over their last 11 regular season games in the first half under Mahomes. They close very strong, but they start slow. They're 15th in first half scoring this year. The Niners, conversely, start very fast. 5-1 against the spread in the first half, number 5 in first half scoring. Some might say, wait a minute, Andy Reid off the bye, very dangerous. Yes, but San Francisco's had 10 days to get ready for this game. They're coming off a Thursday nighter, so I would go ahead and make that play number one. Speaking of first halves, Washington and Carolina. Washington's team total for the first half is 15.5 points. That means we're going to bet over, and we need them to score 16 points in the first half. All right? Nobody has a worse first half defense than the Carolina Panthers. Nobody. It's not even close. They're giving up like 20 points per game in the first half this season. The next worst is like 16. Washington coming off that loss to Baltimore. Nice little bounce back spot here. You can get right against the bad defense. Commanders over 15.5 points in the first half. As we work our way through the rest, Seattle +3 against Atlanta. I'm getting a full field goal there. Seattle's starting to get healthy. They have 10 days of rest coming off that Thursday night game. People are kind of off the Seahawks because they've got this losing streak going. Good. That's a good buy low opportunity for us. Atlanta's been okay, but it seems like every game they're in, it comes down to the wire. So I'm not very interested in having them cover more than a field goal. I'd rather take the field goal with Seattle. And then finally, I'm looking to the over in this Minnesota-Detroit game with Aiden Hutchinson out. If you can't bring pressure against Sam Darnold, he's going to find a way to score points. And while Minnesota's defense has been great, the Lions are equipped to handle some of that, right? They've got one of the best offensive lines in football. Total sitting around 50.5, so I bet the over. So the NFL card looks like this. San Francisco in the first half, money line -120. Commanders first half team total over 15.5 points. Seattle +3. And the Vikings and the Lions to go over 50.5. I almost forgot. My list doesn't include Monday night because it's the same list I use on some other radio shows here at the Four Letter Network. And they want to save all the Monday stuff for Monday, but I don't get to do that with you guys. Buccaneers Monday against Baltimore. That's going to be a sharp side. Tampa Bay gets the big win against New Orleans. They come home. They're the only team in the NFL that's top 11 in both offensive and defensive DVOA. A very balanced team. And given the hurricane and everything that happened down there last week, a lot of times you see these teams have these emotional get-up spots for their community. I like that here against Baltimore, so let's throw that in for Monday night.
This segment of the Joe Fortenbaugh brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Okay, talk to us about the college slate, Joe. I'm a Michigan Wolverine. Don't break my heart.
No, I'm not going to do that to you. Interesting situation for Michigan. Not an official play for me, but they're coming off the bye. Hopefully they've got their situation set at quarterback. They're going to Illinois. I had Illinois last week. I was laying a huge number. They barely survived with the win in overtime against Purdue. Purdue put on a hell of a show. Tonight they have Oregon in what should be a flat spot. I don't know. Maybe Purdue in the first half of that game, but I don't know if Purdue can hang on for a full four quarters. But back to the question at hand, I lean a little bit to Michigan because as good as Illinois has looked at times, I mean, good God, what were they doing playing with their food against Purdue last week? And I think the bye week helps Michigan a little bit. But overall, it is kind of a stay away from me. It's not one of the ones I love, but it's a bit of a lean. As we start to work through this card, buckle up. It's a robust one. Kentucky -1.5 over Florida. Kentucky wants to run, should have no problem running against Florida. Florida wants to run. They're not going to be able to do it against Kentucky. DJ Lagway, outside of that Samford game, has not looked very good. I like Stoops to get him right here. Kentucky -1.5 over Florida. Over 56.5 in the big one between Georgia and Texas. Texas is the number one scoring defense. So people are going to say, Florida ball, why the hell would I want to bet the over? Texas hasn't played anybody. They haven't played any good offenses yet. Of the six teams they played, two teams have already benched the quarterback that played in that game. And the last two games came against teams that started quarterbacks who were making their first career start. Like, this is the first real test for them. And Georgia's defense, while good, is not elite. So I'm going to go over in that game. Little player prop in there as well. Carson Beck, the Georgia quarterback, over 20.5 completions. Texas plays a quarters defense, so they're going to allow you to dink and dunk. That's great for Beck's completions. He's a dink and dunk specialist. He's gone over this number in 4 of 6 games. Moving along, Wyoming, San Jose State, over 53 points. People have the wrong view of these two teams. Wyoming was an under team under previous head coach Craig Bohl, but that's not the case anymore. They're 5-1 to the over this season. San Jose State's head coach is Ken Niumatalola. He used to coach at Navy, so everyone thinks triple option. That's not what he's doing at San Jose State. He's spreading them out. He's going up tempo. He's throwing the ball all over the field. So we're going to play over 53 there. Man, this card is my handwriting is terrible. I look down. I'm like embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I can't even read some of these notes. The Tennessee, my Alabama game, Tennessee team total under 26.5 points. Tennessee's offense is falling off a cliff. The secret's out. They struggle against man coverage. Bama plays a lot of man coverage. Tennessee scores under 26.5 points in that game. Jalen Milroe, there's a prop. His longest completion, over 40.5 yards. I bet that. We need one big bomb. He's the best deep ball thrower in the game. He's done it in 5 of 6 games this season. He's done it in 14 of 19 games over the last 2 years. So here, to recap this card, Kentucky -1.5 over Florida, over 56.5 Georgia, Texas. Player prop in that game, Carson Beck, over 20.5 completions. We like Wyoming, San Jose State, over 53. We like Tennessee's team total, under 26.5. Jalen Milroe's longest completion, over 40.5. And then I throw Arkansas in there for good measure against LSU. I'm realizing this card is all over the place. Like, if you're driving around Chicago right now, how the hell are you making any sense of any of this?
Joe, you always make sense. You always give us your best shot, and you are definitely looking very – your complexion's perfect today, Joe.
Thank you.
You look great.
Glass skin.
You look well
– glowing.
Yeah. You're glowing. You're practically glowing. Have a great weekend, Joe.
Ruthie, what they say is that I'm supposed to look dewy. You want to look dewy. Is that
very
true?
Very dewy and glowy. Stunning. Although on TV, you know, you want to kind of be more mattified, which David is learning. But yeah,
we'll
you
get
look
him
great.
There.
You look great.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody. Get David up on that Korean skincare game.
Yep.
I love you, Chicago. Even though it's the bye week, go Bears. I'll see you next Friday.
Thanks, Joe. Great stuff.
Thanks, Joe
Fortenbaugh with all of his picks on the Bears off weekend. And he picked the Wolverines.
He said he was staying away from it.
Okay. But
me too.
He made you feel better about it? No?
Lean.
He did. He's leaning.
Okay, lean.
I'm leaning away.
I'm leaning to watch the game.
Yeah. That'll be a fun one.
Let's lean towards some Bears conversation. We want to talk about this year's quarterback, and there's another former quarterback in the news for the wrong reasons. We'll let you know what that means next. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.